So this is
Cody,
Cody from Foxhole.
And I do not listen to
I talked over it.
There you go.
I talked over it. I don't have isolated tracks.
That's exactly how the show goes. God
damn. It is.
You do it again.
Today's episode of None Taken is a little different than anything else that we normally do. We have, first of all, there's four voices. We've never done more than three voices. So there's a lot of voices, and we appreciate you being so open-minded to your number of voice partners. And we hope that this experience is mutually pleasurable, because we had a good time. Wow, that's a strained metaphor.
We had a great time, and I felt like we actually did a pretty good job of not talking over each other for the most part, given the work.
I immediately asked for permission to interrupt you. I will say that. But you said I could, and then I
of course
mostly bit my tongue. So we have two guests on. When the show really starts, we kind of act like you know who they are. So just in case you don't, Julian Anthro and Cody from Foxhole are...
.co.
Yeah, foxhole.co. You've heard Cody before on the show. And if you watch our Instagram, you see us share and collaborate posts with Julian a lot. Do you want to talk about Julian? Because listeners are unfamiliar with him.
Julian, former Marine intel guy, also currently an anthropologist. He's worked for the UN. He's written all over the place.
And apparently he dabbles in Alzheimer's research.
Yes, that too. He's flying to London tonight for that.
So the show was a little bit staggered with the guests because of that. We just got him on as quick as we could because his timetable had to move forward because of a flight. And then Cody sticks around and we chat with Cody for like another 45 minutes or an hour even. So
you guys know and love Cody. He's a former Army intel guy, Pathfinder. We've had him on the show, I don't know, a couple of times, I want to say.
He was peak Cody tonight. It was like, this is what he sounds like when he's around friends. I never felt so close to him as I did today.
Cody was on fire tonight. Yeah. That was amazing. Yeah. You guys are going
to
love it.
Yep. It was a real honor to have both of these guys on. So,
absolutely.
You know, I know you guys listen. So when you listen, guys, thank you. I think I thanked you later, but thank you again for coming on. Okay. Back to the rest of the audience. Enjoy. Here's the first ever four voice episode of None Taken.
Enjoy.
I've always been a science nerd. Like, even in the Marine Corps, when I worked in intel, I was always big on science. I did BDAs in Afghanistan, where you just do bets and highs, identify dead bodies. And I was always into forensic stuff, so I was always a science person. So I was in pathology, a pathology assistant. And then I did research in forensic psychology because I just want to find out, do research in PTSD and veterans.
Sure.
So I got recruited into Alzheimer's because PTSD, veterans.
Yeah.
This type of stuff, it kind of mixed in with Alzheimer's dementia.
Yeah, I can see that, especially CTE and that kind of stuff. What do you think about that new, those new studies about the grenade practice, the grenade range being enough to cause that with that, they did that. You saw the thing about that main shooter where they looked at his brain. I'm sure that's on your radar.
Yes, I saw that as well. And I also saw research that stress is also a main factor. Like my priority focus, my like niche in Alzheimer's is primarily sleep, because I've noticed, we notice certain sleep patterns and lack of sleep, socioeconomic issues in America. It could lead to actually more increased risk of Alzheimer's, especially when people have lack of sleep less than 6 hours a day.
Now, is there any study into it? I don't know how to make this a joke, so I'll just say it not as a joke. The former president really loves to not get good sleep. Is there any chance he'll get like...
I could tell both Biden and Trump, they have some form of dementia. Yeah. It's not as serious, but it could in the future. And like jobs like that where congressmen, presidents, they get maybe 4 hours of sleep, but most of the day, they're highly affected by Alzheimer's disease. That's, Ronald Reagan was one of the most perfect examples of that.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
That to me is like by far the worst, like just losing your mental capabilities. That's the scariest shit I could imagine, dude. Like I'd rather be fucking.
Especially for that window of time where you're cognizant of what's happening.
Yeah, that's rough. And it just the impact, because I've seen it happen before to other people as well. And the impact it has on the people around them, their families and friends, etc. Dude, it's fucking rough, man.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah.
Hey, so can you tell us a little about you? Just Because we want to talk about that later
on. We'll get a little intro, a little bio.
Marines, right?
Yeah, I was born and raised in New York City my entire life. I grew up in a military background family. My great-grandfather was a co-talker in World War II.
Whoa.
My mom's side of the family is Navajo. My dad's side is Ethiopian.
Oh, that's
and
that's
my wild. Grandfather's side, they're actually refugees from Ethiopia. When the monarchy fell and the communists took over, they fled, and they ultimately became citizens here. So they met my mom, my grandmother, during the civil rights movement, and so that pretty much merged my families together. I decided to join the military just based on there's something I always wanted to do personally, because my family always talked like a lot about it. It just like us Native Americans, we have this national pride to just kind of join the military. So I did. Originally, I wanted to do infantry, but they gave me intel because my ASVAB score was very, very high. And you're like, no, you're too much of a nerd. So,
but do a lot of people want to be doing infantry and then get like their arm twisted out of it? That's not, I did not, I'm civilian born and raised or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, they do want to join infantry, but they're like, but when you realize when you get into the military, there actually is like a lot more billets that transition into the civilian field more so than infantry, unless you want to go contracting or police.
Right. Yeah.
So if luckily enough for me working in intelligence, it opened like a whole entire career path for me.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And so I did two tours. I did the 31st MEU, Japan, South Korea, Singapore, Hong Kong, Philippines. I was in South Korea in 2010 when North Korea shelled that island, South Korea.
Yeah.
My unit 17, we were like on standby. Luckily nothing broke out, because that was actually, I consider that scarier than Afghanistan, because we literally legitimately thought like World War III is going to happen.
Right. Based on that standby. Because that's the rogue actor that DC is always worried about. It's like, you know, we have a whole timeline, 28 minutes or whatever for when Russia sends shit up. But with North Korea, it's just like something might just show up one day. Like,
yeah, like for us, like going to South Korea by the DMZ is like, they always tell us like if a war between the North and the South broke out, like about 70-80% of the frontline troops of the DMZ would be wiped out within like the first like 10 hours before the U.S. could fully reinforce the South. So wow. Me being on DMZ, I'm like, okay, what the fuck? I guess I'm going to die or something.
Man.
Wow. And I went to Afghanistan in 2012. I was attached to Animal Company because we did advise and assist for the Afghan forces. So it was more advising mission, whereas Baker, Charlie, and Dog Company, that's Weapons Company, they reformed the Dog Company. They did more of the outside combat stuff, but yeah, two of my close friends, Taylor Bond and Curtis Duarte, that I actually went to school with. We went to Pashtun school together to learn Pashtun.
Yeah.
They were both killed there, and their wives, I mean, I still keep in contact with their wives. It's just really depressing what happened. It was just a life's lesson, and I think the Afghanistan deployment changed my perspective on life a lot. Damn. So that's when I eventually just left the military in 2013, did my undergraduate at Adelphi University, did my graduate in Crete in Greece, and I worked for the UN for a couple of years, and pretty much now I'm at NYU as a researcher.
Wow, that's cool. Do you know that Professor Galloway guy? I know it's a big campus, but...
Yes, I do.
Oh, that's cool. Can we get him on the show? Cool. Can you tell? Put in a good word. Put in a good word for us, please.
Hey, are you still doing the Reflections of War? Are you still doing that?
Yes, I am. I'm actually redesigning my website currently. That's why it's not online, but I actually am going to put it online next month.
That's cool.
Okay. Yeah, I downloaded a PDF about it from some academia source today.
Yeah.
It was interesting. The tagline is, this time the victims will write the history or something like
that? History will be written by the victims.
Yes, yeah. I thought that was very interesting. Can you expound on that?
Yeah. So pretty much when I went through my experiences in Afghanistan and just seeing like Afghan civilians die or friends die in the military, it just kind of changed my perspective on life, where I just wanted to show both sides of the system pretty much to have war, because you see something on TV, like a news report saying, oh, like two Marines were killed, or oh, 10 civilians were killed. It's a tragedy, but it leaves people's heads forever. now you do a drawing and you don't even put a caption on the drawing. You just do a drawing somewhere, like say I do drawings in Afghanistan or something that happened in Iraq or Syria. I put it in an art display. I get people paying attention. They're like, what is this dead body? What is this message? What does it mean? It sticks in them forever because they want to know more.
Yeah.
And that's the whole purpose, is to get people more involved, more in detail, so people have an in-depth knowledge of what truly is going on around the world, so the world around them.
Right. And like, communicating through art knows no borders, right? There's no language necessary. You can just...
Yeah, and I've actually found it easier. It's easier for me to draw out my feelings than talk to a random like therapist that really hasn't like understood things I've seen.
So it's an outlet for you as well.
Yeah. Especially because when I did work for the UN, I saw, like, I was actually in Yemen for several months. This is at the height of the war in Yemen. This is why I don't listen to people who praise the Houthis, because the stuff I saw in Yemen between the Houthis and Saudi Arabia, it's, I consider that more hell on earth than a lot of stuff you're seeing happening in either Ukraine or Gaza right now.
When was that again? Did you say that? I'm sorry.
2018, 2019.
Wow. Oh, that's like the height of it, right? Like,
yeah, that was like right before like the ceasefire came into play.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. We talked to Scott Horton about that, and he's, you know, one of the more like anti-war, if we'd stop changing the tires on the F-15s, they, you know, the battle stops. And prior to their involvement in the current conflict in, I guess we'll say Israel or Gaza, I remember feeling frustrated that the U.S. was so involved in that horror. And now I just feel like I wish these fucking Houthis would stop doing this. Like, I feel more conflicted now than I was. It was easier for me prior when I was just like, I'd like the war to stop.
Right.
Yeah. Like, for me, it's just like, I completely understood why Israel, this is like, why pissed off. I mean, you killed 1,300 civilians in the United States. I'm pretty sure we leveled cities for
long. Oh, there'd be a response for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But the longer the war went on, it's just, the more I understand why, like, policy is shifting, like, why Biden is now going out of his way to try to get a ceasefire. Like, right now, there's pretty much a standoff between Netanyahu, Biden, over the potential operation at Rafah right now. And right now, Biden's just hated by both the Muslim Americans, the far left, and now the Israelis, who, and even Netanyahu at this point, who's pretty much, at this point, he's pretty much going to just campaign for Trump at this point.
But he did that in 2020 and 2016 too, so it won't be any different.
True. True. But I mean, the situation on the ground there in Gaza is just tragic. I mean, the impact it's having on children and families, just innocent civilians, you know, being casualties or losing limbs. It's horrific.
And that's kind of why I made the Reflective War Initiative, because I just wanted people to see that there's always a continuous cycle of violence. Like, Israel is going to win this war. Hamas is probably degraded beyond belief. It's probably going to take them several decades to even come back. Mm-hmm. But then you have over 2.2 million Palestinians who are going to be homeless and have this complete anger and hatred directed at Israelis. And the cycle's ultimately just going to continue and continue.
Yeah, I mean, you know, slice it however you want to slice it, but Israel's creating more terrorists by its actions right now in Gaza. I mean, that's just, there's no chance that isn't happening. So, as you said, we just continue that cycle of violence, and nobody wins, and it's just, man, it sucks.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, really, I've been writing a report, but I'm waiting until the end of the war to release it. But for me, I consider Israel's response akin to how the United States, like, lost public opinion of the world after 9/11.
Yep.
The entire world was, like, completely sympathetic to the U.S. I mean, I grew up in Lower Manhattan, so I was right by the World Trade Center as I saw it fall at 10 years old. And everyone was completely behind the U.S., originally the invasion of Afghanistan. Then when the Bush administration veered off into Iraq, and a war no one really wanted, and Abu Ghraib, and the sectarians of war that followed, it just completely damaged U.S. foreign policy, U.S. public opinion around the world. And yet Israel, who was completely, everyone completely supported Israel after October 7th. Mm-hmm. And then it only took 1 week of hellscape bombing, and you saw how quickly public opinion changed around the world from the war.
Yeah, especially in terms of like public opinion. I mean, there was an immediate response of people that were against it, but yeah, I think you're right. It was about a week. What were you going to say, Alan?
I was going to say, as it should. I mean, yeah. I think the public was correct about that. Hey, Cody has joined us now. Welcome to the show, Cody.
What's up, dude?
What's up?
Hey.
I like the microphone. I don't think you had that set up last time we talked.
No, I got richer.
That Patreon.
Oh, yeah,
money.
You got a ring light. Let me turn my ring light on.
No, that's just the light.
Oh, that's just the light.
You can go like Home Depot. They're $4. Yeah, how you guys doing? Julian, hi, what's up?
Great.
Hey, good. How are you?
Good, man. Good, man.
Good to see you again, Cody.
We have never attempted to have four people talk on this show before. I'm going to do my best because every part of me just interrupts constantly. I'm going to do my best not to do that. So I think in light of that, Alan, we didn't really talk about this, but you want to steer a little bit? Can I hand it over to you?
Yeah. Okay. So first, welcome to the show, Cody and Julian. We wanted to have you on because you have a very extensive background in military intelligence, et cetera. And you have somewhat differing opinions on what's going on with the Russia-Ukraine war.
Oh, can I interrupt?
Sure.
I always like to describe it as Cody is like the, not like the evil devil on the shoulder, but he's the one that's telling me like why things are not going to work. And Julian's page is more like, look, this is total hell, but like Russia's fucked. And I'm like, well, between you two, I feel really even keel, like understanding this, confused as hell. But yeah, I'm glad I don't feel as bad as you make me feel, Cody. I'm glad I don't have quite the rose colored glasses I feel like I get from you, Julian. But I wanted to have you on here to kind of like hash that out.
So from my perspective, Cody's just like a super realist. Like he's just like, look, this is what it is. It is what it is.
What are you saying Julian is then?
Well, no, I mean, I have more, you know, I've interacted with Cody a lot more than Julian. Yeah. Anyways, all right, so let's go. So let's talk about it. So you had a post recently, Julian, about the decimation of the Russian officer corps, the lack of NCOs, and how you believe that's going to impact the war going forward. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Yes. So I've done some research, and Russia so far, they've lost close to 3,700 officers as of March 15th. And I believe this is going to affect a lot of operational planning going forward in the war due to not having an NCO corps. And NCO corps are a very big backbone of Western militaries, especially, I mean, it's one of the taglines of the Marine Corps. You have a complete top-down heavy officer corps in the Russian military who completely, you don't allow any type of critical thinking in lower troops. So despite the fact that a lot of Russian conscripts are gaining completely good experience every day, I mean, you have about 10,000 Russian conscripts that are coming into the country per month or rotating. They're not allowed to have any type of, it's like semi-autonomy of operational planning. And because of this, you have a lot of experienced commanders who are being killed, experienced commanders who are decorated from Syria, Georgia, or even the Chechen wars. And now you have the Russian military in a place where they've had a decorated Yevgeny Prigozhin, who, well, we all saw what happened to him as soon as he had trouble with the Russian Ministry of Defense. And
yeah.
We have
Shoigu.
Yeah, we also have like pretty decent generals like Alexander Lapin, and I forgot the other guy's name from the VDV. But the thing is, Putin won't let them be generals. And that's the main issue. And I see that in right now in Western militaries as well, where generals aren't exactly generals anymore. They're more politicians. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe Russia's conscripts, I actually have great experience. And I believe a lot of Russia's reserve and conscripts have more experience than a lot of Ukrainian reserves. But the issue is, can they be allowed to think, and can they be allowed to have some type of operational planning going forward in the war? And that's one thing I wanted to just constantly emphasize on.
Okay. All right. Cody, you've had a lot of posts recently about like Russian strategies militarily and how they differ from Western strategies in war.
You wanted to come on here and talk about human wave tactics, you said. That's what you said.
Let's talk about it.
No, first off, yeah, Julian's incredibly right. You know, the officer corps has had a big impact. Yeah, or they have been pretty much hit hard. And it has a lot to do with how they structure their army. Everything he said is true. And, you know, there isn't an NCO corps. They have what they call contract soldiers. So they have their conscription, and then they have their guys who contract in and stay a little longer. But it's different, right? They fight different. They think different. How they want to fight, how they, you know, define victory, is it's all different. And it's challenging, to say the least. And so when you look at it from a hobbyist standpoint, or you look at it from a war college or Western standpoint, you're like, this is awful. And it's like, well, that's how they fight. You know, they don't, you know, he's right again about the conscripts, right? Like, they have a conscripted army. It's going to do what they got to do. And it doesn't have the skill set to do, even barely shoot, move, communicate, let alone combined arms maneuver warfare. But I mean, the same thing that you can say about Russia is the same thing you can say about Ukraine. I mean, the new general that just stepped up is USSR trained. They have a heavy officer corps. They don't have a good NCO corps as well. And so it falls back to, as we see this progress, you know, from 2014 to 2022, we had about 100,000 Ukrainians trained by, you know, both of our units. I mean, he's a Marine. I'm 101st guy turned fifth group, but dude, the 101st had rotations to Ukraine. The Marine Corps had guys go to Ukraine, and we trained up about 100,000 Ukrainians.
And was this just since like 2014?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what's that? That's 8 years. Sure. 8 years we had to get ready for this. And we only trained 100,000, which is about 3 divisions.
Wow.
They're all dead.
Yeah.
Those guys are gone.
Yeah.
And so now we're kind of looking at this, and I would say right now is about the halftime show. And it's like, who's going to come out in this third quarter, fourth quarter, and pull the win? And I mean, honestly, the more time goes on, the more the West forgets about it. We just had a spending bill, and it
had Israeli aid in it.
Yeah, right. God damn, man, they have a hell of a lobby.
Yeah, they do. It's a whole other thing.
It is one of those things that, as you look at it, you know, the officer corps, going back to that point, is they're on the front, right? They're leading it. And in the Russian way of war and in the Russian system, they talk about how they want those lieutenants, they want those captains on the front leading those positions. I mean, for instance, as an officer, like, you usually only get in a 20-year career, you know, you get your platoon time, you get your company command time, you get your battalion command time. That's it. So you get about 4.5 years of leadership. No, in the Russian army, you can be a commander forever. And so, you know, it's exactly like he said, you know, you can do 10 years on the front line with the Russian army and never go to staff. They have guys entirely devoted to staff work, like logistics, intel, personnel. And so they are losing that. But on the flip side, you know, there's just so many of them, right? Like, if there's no NCOs, right? Like, there's how many NCOs are in a platoon, right? You got your 2 sergeants per team leader, then you got your squad leader, so that's 3 sergeants, 4 squads, 3 times 4, you get 12, plus the platoon sergeant, so you're 13.
Cody's on his numbers, guys.
Yeah, so I mean, like, when you start thinking, like, okay, there's no NCO corps, how many officers are there? It's like, well, there's a shit ton of fucking lieutenants running around, and yeah, they're kind of useless. I was one once, I'll tell you that. You know, I took up a corner and I turned oxygen into carbon dioxide, barely. But I mean,
is it kind of the way that you've talked about tanks before on your show, where it's like, yeah, they're blowing up their tanks, but they have so many tanks.
God, oh God, so many tanks. It's like, yeah, at some point, even, you know, US Eurocom's just like, where the fuck are these tanks coming from? Like,
yeah, because I believe Russia, they inherited 12,000 from the Soviet Union. That's not counting the existing T-80, T-90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of tanks, man. That's a lot of tanks. So it's become oddly, well, maybe not oddly, but it's become politicized, this war in the U.S., right?
It's not our war. What did anybody in Ukraine have to do with my life in America?
To Ukraine has become this sort of political hot button. One side's like, no, we don't need to do that. We have stuff to worry about here. The other side's, look, if we don't let the Ukrainians fight Russia in Ukraine, they're going to be fighting them in Europe or NATO. You know, what are your
Or at a minimum, you know, we all have a set of rules we've agreed on, and one of them is you don't just invade your neighbor for no reason. Or sorry, ethnic denazification. I want to hear what you have said about what Alan said, but I'm going to forget this, and it's been bugging the fuck out of me. Putin's whole justification is our history of our country goes back to another country. You can't have another country be the history origin of your country. England, ours is another country, and it's fine. Okay, go on.
I listened to that 2 minute history spiel. You know, it was only 2 minutes for Tucker Carlson. Yeah.
That was 30 minutes, bro.
Either of you.
Julian, you want to go first? You want to go to me? Then you can retort.
I'll go first.
Okay.
For me, this is what really just drew my red line through the war is Putin using historical claims, whereas it's just a regular war, whereas he was just probably trying to change the government into a more pro-Russian one, or that's it. But using a historical claim is actually having a very, very negative polarizing effect currently right now. We saw it in Latin America. Venezuela is now making territorial claims of Guyana. Mm-hmm. And the South Caucasus, we have Ilham Aliyev emboldened by Western weakness and buying his oil. Now he's pretty much preparing another potential war against Armenia. Mm-hmm. Armenia right now has an ultimatum to surrender several villages or they face another war in the next few weeks. We have Turkey's Erdogan, also a NATO member, rogue NATO member. One of the most rogue is obviously still has territorial claims on the Greek waters, Greek Isles, and that's not even including the ongoing standoff in Cyprus, which tensions are heightening there again.
We don't talk about Cyprus
and
in this house.
We don't even, and that's not even counting Xi Jinping, the Chinese claims, which is in their constitution, that they should take Taiwan even by force if necessary. And it's just one big domino effect where Putin is pretty much showing, is pretty much gambling on Western weakness. If he's allowed to take any type of territorial historical claim, what's stopping any other person around the world from territorial claims? And I say this as someone of Ethiopian descent on my dad's side. We currently have pretty much a dictator at this point, Abiy Ahmed, in power, who's now using the pretense of historical claims where he wants to have sea access, but our country is very, very poor, sick. We've gone through a genocide. We have, like, no one wants to fight for a madman anymore, and he's just persecuting people using historical claims for his own Oromo clan now. So this is where we're pretty much where I think this is a start of something major where Putin's ultimate goal is to collapse world-based order. It's not really more about Ukraine. It's showing the world that he could collapse a world-based order and no one's going to stop him. And when his other allies or affiliates see that around the world, they're going to act in the same way.
Julian, I sent you a clip of Peter Zion the other day, and you're like, I've never heard of this guy in my life. I'm like, you sound like you, and I know me and Cody have talked about Peter Zion and this, like, you know, rules-based order and deglobalization, and, you know, Cody, that sounds like something I've heard you say.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds weird, right, to use historical ties, especially to Westerners and especially to Americans, right? To sit there and be like, you know, we, you know, his excuses, you know, Ukraine, what does the word Ukraine even mean, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's the land between.
It's the Rus.
I mean, what's, yeah, and the, it's theirs. And, you know, and at the same point, he sits there and he says, you know, I mean, you can take it one step further. What's a Cossack? You know, the Ukrainians all say they're Cossacks. We're Cossacks. And it's like, well, the Cossacks were a group of people that had an agreement with the Russian government to guard the borders. So it literally means, like, they're sitting there like, we're Cossacks and Ukrainians. It's like, you're literally saying and playing into the historical tie of it. And it's like, well, oh, damn it. And it's, but it, to go back to the main point, it's, you know, these historical ties, it means something to them. It means a lot to them, right? I mean, Iranians don't see themselves as Iranians. They're the Persian Empire.
Right.
The Turks are the Ottomans, right? Like, we're the guys, right? You know, we puff out our chests and we do that stuff. I mean, even if you ask an Afghani, they'll tell you, like, we defeated the British in the 16th century, you know, just for generations. We defeated the Russians and we'll defeat you too. And it's like, you know, history means a lot to them. And for us, it's like, well, okay, that doesn't really, that's not a good, but to the Russian people, it means a lot. It means everything to them to have that back. And, you know, Peter Zion talks about it, and, you know, he's a great guy as far as like economics and diplomacy, when you look at campaign planning,
like the paper of it, right? Like it all.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's just like, there's some tactical and strategic stuff going on there, but you know, you got to play to the fifth generation warfare, the heart, the mind, the body, the soul, you know, the psyops. And it, you know, and it's funny because when you look at the Russians and you ask them, you know, is Putin a dictator? Is he any of these things? And they're like, you know, if we didn't have a Putin, we'd probably have to make one, right? Like Putin's a cultural representation of who they are. And he's telling them, like, this is our historical ties to that land. This is ours, and we will take it. And, it, you know, you look at the other side, the Ukrainians, you know, what is their soul? What is their mind? You know, Kyiv's a party zone. Lviv's a party zone. Odessa's a beach party. You know, the guys on the line are fighting for their own reasons, you know, their home. And so it just kind of boils down to, it looks kind of funny in our eyes, but to them, it's like, this is why they do what they do. And they're serious about that, and they'll fight you. I mean, it's like a Serb and, you know, kebab. I mean, like Julian posted it, it's summertime, you know, it's the Serbs are coming out for the kebab, you know, it's just who we are.
I'm ridiculous.
Can you make the argument for why the U.S. should continue to support Ukraine in this war? Either. Well,
for me personally, it's just sending a message to other dictators, Ilham Aliyev, Tayyip Erdogan, Kim Jong-un, and Xi Jinping, because they're seeing, because even though we have a mutual defense pact with like countries such as Taiwan, Philippines, Japan, they're still going to think that, well, you know, if U.S. doesn't give their word to a country, that they're going to support them until whatever it takes. Why can't we just push into one village? Let's just see, push into a village, see how the U.S. reacts, fly over their airspace, see how the U.S. reacts. And we're seeing this almost every day. Like, I pretty much specialize in the Mediterranean. We see it almost every day. We tell Erdogan to stop. We're going to cut their economy. We're going to sanction them. And almost about 10, 20 times a day, we have Turkish aircraft still flying over the Aegean Isles. And here in Russia, believe it, Russia, they do, like, Cody is right. Russia has a very, very strong national ties. Everyone there is rallying behind Putin because he's showing them that they could potentially have an empire come back. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when Putin says that empire, he's not just talking about Ukraine as well, because ultimately it's sending a message to countries such as Poland, Romania, Moldova, and even the Baltics are pushing their red lines, because to them, they have PTSD, generational PTSD of the Russian Empire, means that they're eventually going to have a showdown with them. So our fellow NATO members are seeing, well, if the U.S. is unreliable throughout whatever it takes, when can we trust the U.S.? And I wanted to highlight those countries because Poland, Romania, the Baltics, they are one of the very few NATO countries that actually meet requirement spending, and they've actually been sending a lot of weaponry to Ukraine compared to more of the Western European counterparts who don't really truly understand the culture of Eastern Europe. And that's a major thing, a major conflict going on in NATO right now, that I honestly, one of the few things I do agree with Trump about.
Just on that subject, if you don't mind, I don't know if you wanted to respond to that, Cody, but what the fuck's France doing?
France is one of those fly balls, right? Like, all of a sudden they're doing one thing where they're like, we're going to send troops to Ukraine, maybe. And then they start giving Milans to the Armenians and telling the Azeris to fuck off. And it's like, I couldn't tell you, honestly. They're a wild card in our little group of sunny Philadelphia NATO members. Like, they're,
yeah.
Macron's wild. And I mean, but to go back to what Julian's talking about here, like, I served with JKW, which is the Polish special operations in Kandahar, as well as the Lithuanians. Love those guys. And, you know, they all have their isms together. Like, whoever put the Polish and the Lithuanians on the same base in the American military needs to just get fired, because they hate each other. But they'll work together in a pinch if you, you know, persuade them. But, I mean, it's same thing with Ukraine, right? Like, it's not that they're pro-Ukrainian. Like, there's Polish farmers ready to beat the shit out of Ukrainian farmers right now and all these things going on, but they just hate Russians more than anything. And the passionate emotional side of me says, yeah, look, guys, I spent a couple months standing up a training camp in Ukraine, helping those guys. I've sent tons and tons of, like, literally 2 tons worth of extra army equipment to Ukraine and done incredible things for those guys. And I know at the end of the day, though, they're a partner force, right? If you're not a NATO ally, if you're not a certified contract in hand, like, the United States government will come here. And then I know, you know, you could bring up the Belfast Agreement, so we could talk about that. But it's like, if you're not an ally on a piece of paper with the United States, the worst thing that could ever happen is the CIA show up your doorstep, because we are going to use you, we are going to abuse you, and we are going to put you on the bench with the South Vietnamese. We're going to put you there with the Afghanis. We're going to put you there with the Kurds, who always love to see us for some reason, but we're going to use you, we're going to abuse you, and then we're going to put a Chinook on the embassy and we're going to run away. I mean, one of the first rules in Army Special Forces, we train those guys, we equip them, and we go out and do missions with them. But I mean, the Green Berets and Fifth Group, you know, there were guys who'd stayed 30 years and abandoned the Kurds more than twice. And so it's like, you know, they tell you all the time, don't fall in love with the partner force. And it sucks to say it, but, like,
I see,
Ukraine's our partner force. We're going to use them, we're going to abuse them. And then if they win, hey, BlackRock brought your country. Enjoy that high interest loan. We're out of here, baby. And if they lose, it's like, that happens, whatever. But, you know, we did kill, like, you know, X amount of Russians. And so, you know, that I will say that is a win on the scoreboard. Kill a shit ton of Russians for us. But yeah.
The Russians always seem to have more bodies to throw into the fight, though.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to bring up this point because it's actually a criticism I have of Ukraine that I actually did write on a previous article, that Ukraine should have been mobilizing. Even though Ukraine does monthly conscription, they should have mobilized last year, and they should at minimum in 2024 mobilize at least 400,000 to 500,000 men. The Rada has to pass this, because a major problem I'm seeing on the battlefield personally is that Ukraine has a lot of, like, very, very professional disciplined units, but these units aren't getting rotated, so they're exhausted. And this is what happened in Avdiivka, where Russia just saw some of Ukraine's best troops, like, they could hold the line, but Russia just constantly sent fresh conscripts over and over and over. And the Avdiivka units, they were never rotated. So a lot of them were just eventually overwhelmed by superior numbers and a shell shortage that ultimately happened because Europe never met their shell allocations. The U.S. stopped sending money. And that ultimately led to the disaster at Avdiivka, which could have held. I mean, I wrote an article that in November that was ultimately going to fall sometime in February, March. But I didn't expect it to fall in the way that it fell. But yeah, that's what I think Ukraine has to at least mobilize 400,000 to 500,000 men and put emphasis on training. Because I'm seeing a lot of units are very, very undisciplined. Rob Lee wrote about this, is that a lot of frontline units, even though they're very, very strong and professional, behind them there was, like, no defensive barriers or lines. And that's why, like, after Bakhmut fell, Russia and Wagner, they were very able to consolidate that area. So when General Sursky of Ukraine tried to counterattack over the summer, it went nowhere because they were able to solidify the lines, because Ukraine had no defensive line, so it was easier for them to prepare and dig in.
How did you think Avdiivka was going to fall?
Me personally, I knew ultimately due to Russia's sheer numbers, because in the winter, Ukraine pretty much doesn't, they should put an emphasis on more conscripting more men or mobilization, but they don't do this in the winter. They only do it in the summer months. So a lot of brigades are still being held back around the Kyiv, Lviv, or Odessa area. So a lot of the Donbass frontline or Donbass Zaporizhia frontline units, they're just constantly battered and haven't been rotated in maybe a year or two. And ultimately, exhaustion does kick in warfare.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on. And, you know, he mentioned something that I agree with, and it's that, and I agree with it and I would emphasize it even more. And I would say, he said that generals are politicians, right? And I would say, like, yeah, they are, and they have to be, because they have to bridge the gap between the Congress or the government to the troops, and they're kind of the mouthpiece to that. And you know, as you know, most of them just get caught up in the politics and get a nice job at Raytheon later on. But but it is, there's all these mistakes happening, and there's all these things happening in Ukraine, and it just, you know, the realist, obviously, but it's, you know, Ukraine's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, right? Like, if they sit there and they do a mobilization of 400,000, 500,000, which should have been the right play, obviously, I mean, I'm agreeing 100%, should it been the right move? Because then they would have fresh troops that are trained, equipped, and ready now, but they aren't. And the reason being, and this is probably why, is politics. Because you had a counteroffensive going on, it wasn't going well, and then all of a sudden you've got Zelensky coming up there on the stage like, hey, I'm gonna need about 500,000 more young men. And it's like, well, what the fuck, bro? And it sends the bad message. And you know, that's the same reason why I'm starting to see some Eastern Front World War II isms go on here, is like Avdiivka, Bakhmut. It's like, you know, we can't lose this city. This is a fortress city, right? And it's mainly due to the line. The line can't move. We need the line to stay to show we're winning and get more aid from Washington. And so it's kind of this plug and play. And I've heard rumors that that's the reason they changed the commander of the armed forces, was because he was like, no, we need to pull out. We need to reset lines. We need to redo all these things, or else we are going to get fucked. Mm. And, you know, the rumor from the guys over in Mozart Group, who disbanded a year ago, but they were saying like, no, apparently it's like direct from Zelensky, like, you will stay, you will fight. We need to the forward line of troops not to move, because if we start losing, we're gonna start losing aid from Washington. You know, all the Americans are gonna see we're losing in Ukraine, and they're gonna stop sending aid, and they're gonna stop sending supplies. And so it was a little bit of a political move as well. And I think that that's what's happening, is there's a lot of, we do this or do we do that?
Well, so if it's all just more war seems to be the options that are on the table, how does it end? And Julian, I kind of recognize the time. If you had something else you wanted to say first, jump in with that, of course. But how if more war is what is basically the solutions that America is offering and Ukraine is saying, how does it end? Like, is there an end?
Well, for me, I've just been analyzing a potential timeline. Ideally, me personally, Ukraine should no longer go on the offensive in 2024. Everything should be defensive, mobilize, prepare to train your troops, do reconnaissance on Russian weak points. Me personally, I think Luhansk or Kherson would be much better than Zaporizhia. And you should prepare a potential offensive in 2025, early 2025, in that winter months between January, February, before the mud season starts, March, April. Now, Ukraine has to play very, very smart in 2024, continue attriting Russian forces, continue consolidating fortresses, build your defensive lines. Because in early 2025, depending on who wins the presidential election, Ukraine has to show that they did all the things that they were expected to do. Mobilize, train your troops, rotate, gather support, prepare a major offensive that everyone can agree with, that won't result in a disaster as we saw just prior summer. Now, 2025, I think, is the most decisive year in the war, depending on how Ukraine's offensive go or Russia's offensives go. I think Russia's going to do one more offensive this summer, and I think that's going to be around the Kupiansk area, but that's it. But if Ukraine can't have any solid, tangible results, I do think the West is going to ultimately force Ukraine into a settlement negotiation, pretty much like a frozen war, Iran-Iraq war, but except this time Russia has a 17% territorial gain. And whatever happens from there is just, I don't know, but I know there is a lot of rhetoric going around Eastern Europe saying if we can't trust the U.S., like Poland's foreign minister said, we should restart a nuclear program. So I have no idea what's going to happen after that. But I do think this is where the war is heading, is 2025 is the most decisive year.
I think Poland should, but.
Yeah. Can I just go back real quick to you talked about one of the factors in Avitka was the lack of supplies. Obviously, fatigue was a huge issue as well, but the lack of artillery shells, etc. You had a post recently about how the Koreans are sort of using this as a proxy war. The you know, bad Korea supplying supplying Russia with all their shells. Yeah, a lot of them don't work, but you know, some of them do. Can you talk a little bit about that before we lose you here?
Yeah, so pretty much South Korea was the second biggest supplier of Ukraine shell-wise in 2023. North Korea is now Russia's biggest shell supplier. And ultimately, these are pretty much the two Koreas are now engaging in their own type of shadow war, proxy war, preparing. Because as of right now, South Korea is one of those countries that are like, even though we have a defense treaty with the U.S., should we restart a nuclear weapons program? And they're very, very weary of Kim Jong-un's intentions. He just broke any type of diplomatic ties that South Korea tried to build the past 7 years, much to Washington's ire. South Korea actually did try to extend their hand. Now North Korea says, we no longer want unification. We just want destruction of the South and the U.S. So for South Korea, they're banking on a Ukrainian victory to show North Korea that we could support our partners, and hopefully our partners will support us back if we were to go to war with each other. Now, North Korea, their shells, despite being a lot of them being duds, they're actually very, very effective. North Korean shells, due to the fact that North Korea has a slave army, they could produce shells like out of nowhere, constantly all the time. They might be duds, but a lot of them you can mask troop movements, construction. In Avdiivka, Russians built tunnels underneath and bypass Ukrainian defensive lines, and that's actually how they took the city, is that they used North Korean shells to mass construction and caught Ukraine completely off guard. So that's pretty much what I just wanted to put in and put there.
Oh, that's clever. Do you got to get going now, man?
Yeah, in a couple minutes, but okay. I just wanted to say thank you guys so much, and thank you, Cody. I'm actually glad you gave me your emphasis on this war today.
Aw.
Yeah. No. There you go. Yeah. No, I read all your articles. I was like, man, we agree on like 85% of shit. I was like, what the fuck is going on right now?
We must not be reading the same things.
Like, fucking.
Yeah. I know I'm a science nerd, but if you ever are in New York, just let me know. Just message me. I'm always in New York if I'm not traveling around the world. Right now, I have to get ready to go to London for a stupid research conference. But it was an honor talking to you guys today. Yeah,
thank you, man.
It was awesome having you on. Where can people find you? What are your projects, your socials, etc.?
Well, right now, I'm Julian Antho on Twitter, Julian Antho 2 on Instagram, and anyone can just Google my name, Julian McBride. I'm pretty much all over Google.
Yeah.
I'm just complete nerd.
I looked at your link tree this morning. I was like, God, where is this guy not published?
Yeah, there's quite a variety.
it's like kept scrolling. I'm like, when does it end? No, man, it was a blast having you on. Thanks.
Originally, I was supposed to go on CNN, and I cursed out one of their senior editors one time. So, I mean, I consider that a blessing, getting banned from CNN.
Hey, man, you enjoy a few things in common now, man.
It's been great having you on, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Safe travels.
Cheers.
All right. Cheers.
Cody, can we stick around and pick your brain a little?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I'm always good. Here. What do I do?
Well,
we were hoping to have him for a bit longer than that, but you know, he had to catch a plane. Yeah. So,
he's going to hate this. He's going to hear this part. He's, you know,
he's going to be like, I got that guy out here. The floor.
No. Yeah.
God damn it.
Did I hear a kitty cat earlier?
No, dude, I've got four dogs. I got a new puppy, and like, he's a pit bull lab mix, and he likes to beat my little terrier.
Horrible.
No, he's a monster. He's
like, but there's no toddlers, right? Do you have any toddlers?
No,
you're fine. Just
fat little country dogs eating fried steaks and stuff. What do you want? But
nothing wrong with that.
I was like, Ukraine needs to cease fire or surrender next year. Like that's it. And
I forgot that's what we were talking about. Yeah. Well, we didn't get to hear your side of that. Yeah. I've been saying to Alan, like, I mean, that's not what I would like to see, but you know, a ceasefire, I mean, people act like that doesn't mean it's an opportunity for you to, people are like, it's the same thing people say with Israel and Gaza. They're like, well, if there's a ceasefire, they're just going to regroup. It's like, all right, well, you can regroup. Like, maybe that's not a bad thing to do. Like, have you ever, it's like when you and your partner are fighting and you're like, can we just take 5 minutes and see if we want to keep doing this 5 minutes from now? Like,
yeah.
Right. So for that ceasefire to work, though, what do you think Ukraine has to give up? I mean, obviously, it seems like the predominantly Russian-speaking areas of Ukraine have already been fully Russified,
essentially. But then you've given Russia a blueprint for how to get another 17%.
The big thing is, like, obviously the Belfast Agreement goes out the window, right? So Ukraine, that whole, you know, you get rid of your nukes, we can do our own thing, and, you know, nobody will invade you. And if you look at Section 3 of the Belfast Agreement, it says no economic coercion, which means you can't sit there as Ukraine. So the Belfast Agreement is, for those that don't know, Ukraine gave up its nukes. The U.S. and Russia said nobody will invade you. You have complete autonomy and all this stuff. But if you look at the 94
post the USSR collapse.
Yeah. And so Section 3 says, hey, no economic coercion from anybody. Like, Russia will not come in and nobody from the West will come in, which is exactly what the 2014 color revolution was about, right? Like, EU coming in and all that stuff. So this is Russian thinking, right? This isn't my thinking, this is Russia thinking. So it's like, okay, obviously that goes out the door. You have to give Russia all that property that they took, and then you have to give them whatever else they want, and then you have to agree to it, and everybody's got to recognize it.
Because it's going to be poison pill, like Minsk 2 was, where it was just like, you're going to do something that won't abide by it, so we won't, and then you're going to accuse us of not abiding by it.
I'm under the impression that the real reason that Putin does the things that he does is to keep NATO away, because there's a clause within NATO that says you can't have any territorial disputes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys need to read up on spend some time in synagogue like your boy here. And, you know, learn some law.
Dude, again. I would say that again. He's leveraging the no territorial disputes part, is what you're saying?
Yeah. So in order to join NATO, you can't have a territorial
dispute. Oh, that's hilarious. He's like, oh, well.
So he's just like, he just like comes in, takes like 1 kilometer. He's like, you willing to die for this?
That's,
and they're like,
that's honestly like, that's not even that profound. I mean, it is. Don't get me wrong. I'm upset I didn't think of it before, but that's like blatantly what's happening.
It's literally your brother coming into your room, ripping a nasty fart and going, what are you going to do about it? Yeah, and then when you smack him, like, this is why I did this, because you're an asshole.
Yeah.
That's Putin. And that's what he's doing. And so in order to beat that, you just say, hey, you know what? Everything you have, that's yours. Here's another 50 kilometers. That's a DMZ.
Okay.
It's all yours.
And
that is Russian. And then you say, this is Ukraine. And everybody goes, yeah. And then you turn around and you sign a NATO agreement. And you say, I'm in NATO now, but you have to give that up.
You know what? I think everybody could stomach that, honestly.
Ukraine's
would that be would that for be now? Would that be an existential risk for Zelensky politically, though, if he did that?
He's done for.
He doesn't survive that, right?
Hey, I lost. You know, that's like being the divorce lawyer. Like, hey, man,
right?
I lost the house.
It's over,
I lost
man.
The cars, but you got the vacation home. Like, what the fuck am I supposed to do in Tampa? Like,
strip clubs.
So, it's not good, and it's political suicide, but it's like one of those things, like somebody has to make that hard call.
Well, he's also, if he has an election against Budenov, he's losing that.
The intel guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bubble chin?
Yeah. Little family guy.
He's kind of goofy because I get to talk to by a lot of the guys I made friends with over there, because, you know, you stand up like a little training camp, you make a bunch of friends, but they're like, this Budenov guy, what do you think of him? I'm like, he's kind of a goober. And they're like, yeah, he is.
This is talking about him years ago or recently?
No, now. So Budenov is like the intel, the soft lead, and everyone's like, man, he's a genius. This guy's a genius. He was trained by the CIA. There's a specific unit. It's like 22 something, and it's on the wiki page. And on one of his missions, it catastrophically failed. He got beat up by Spetsnaz, and he had to run away. And he never did cool things again like that. And so operationally, he's like their Mark Wahlberg, or Lone Survivor, or whatever that guy. Wow. Yeah.
so you're saying he's become risk averse? Is that what you're?
He's better strategically, though, right?
Like he wasn't.
But, hey, you know what? Hey, I love that we worked our way around to that, because now I'm like, you know what? Budenov might get elected, right? Now, you know, he's a CIA puppet, but he'll run and he'll get elected. Yeah, that's right.
That's that all makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah,
like telling me that he's a CIA puppet makes it more likely he'll be the
right. Yeah. Right.
Tell me how a Ukrainian Soth unit goes to Africa and kills Wagner Soth. I'll wait.
That was a question I meant to ask you guys. So, like, he's talking about shells being supplied. You know, when you talk about Korea, you don't want to get your R's and L's mixed up. That was unintentional. He's talking about shells being supplied by, that's actually the punchline in one of my favorite jokes that I can't tell anymore. The punchline is supplies. So they were getting shells supplied by both Koreas on both sides of this war. We've got US, Western support, everything. I mean, they're fighting in the Sahel. It certainly sounds like World War III. The Middle East is on fire and they're influencing each other. Like, you can't, like, why do we not call it that?
Because
okay,
just hasn't
been bad. We don't want to do that again, right?
Stocks would go down, and everyone would freak out.
Can't have that.
And then everyone would start going to the doctor and getting antidepressants, and really not want to go to the military. But you can't do that. And I mean, like I was telling, and I really wish Julian had stayed because we could have more time to talk about it. But you know, it's that it's the rock and a hard place, right? Like if you go from like, you know, this is like a PTSD indicator, right? If somebody pulls their car in front of you, you don't immediately pull your gun and start, you know, pointing it at him in front of his face, right? You don't go 0 to 10. You got to kind of like match it, that energy, so you don't freak everybody out. And nobody wants to see Biden, you know, come in here and be like, we're doing a draft. We're going to do all this stuff. Like, why is Alex Jones president? Okay, Alex, yeah. Alex Jones is
president. Way too much energy for sleeping.
Alex Jones is president. And he's like, we're going to start doing a draft. We're going to start building so many tanks. All of South Korea, you know, all of South Korea is just going to build ICBMs. Like, we're just gonna, it's all over. Like, nobody wants that, right? You know, then almost, you know, stock market plummets, everybody freaks out, you know, everybody starts running to Canada again.
Your Jones is getting better. Like, it was good before, but it's amazing. Like, have you been putting time into it?
I got a lot of friends who send me stuff, and now that he's back up, now that InfoWars is back up and he's done with his court stuff, I'm like, man, he's another dollar in the Alex Jones's right jar.
On fire.
But yeah, I mean, but to answer your question, to play this from an OSINT perspective and not give away the fun stuff, right? If you go on to Google, you can type up CIA ground branch kit, and you type that in Afghanistan, and you'll see this weird looking uniform with like a weird looking AK, and you're like, that's not an American uniform. That's not, we didn't carry, they were dressing like the ANA, they were just looking like the commandos, so you couldn't tell who they were, right? So a bunch of Afghans land, and then there's like one maybe really tan dude, and it's like, well, that's a CIA operator. All right, so like if you got 24 white dudes with AKs in Africa and they go beat up a bunch of Wagner dudes and they go, yeah, Ukraine, and it's like, was that Ukraine? That looks like a linebacker from Texas A&M I knew once.
Yeah.
No, it's probably ground branch, like, and then just waxing Wagner and then putting a little Ukraine flag, like, yeah, like, okay,
it's like the cops sprinkle some coke on him.
Yeah, just a little coke.
He'll be fine. Actually, so let's talk about the terrorist attack in Moscow on Friday. So Julian had a post, I wish he was still here, I could ask him about, but he said don't Google Ryzan 1999, which essentially
listened to him. I didn't Google it. What is that?
So that's like when they blew up those buildings.
This is the Chechen apartments? The
Chechen war. Yeah. Started the second Chechen war.
Yeah.
And then it turned out that the guys that had the explosives were like FSB.
Yeah. It was like explosives that are only made in Russia.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, well, was that, seems like a false flag operation. I mean, people are speculating that what happened, you know, at that concert is similar. I don't know. What thoughts?
Man, Julian's going to hate this. Because I wish he could defend it, but
right.
You know, it's because he also wrote in that article, because I read a bunch of his stuff. He wrote that, you know, this is proof that, you know, they're sending all their guys forward and that they don't have a lot of manpower to watch the internals of the country and stuff like that. And, you know, I kind of drew a different opinion from it. I thought, damn, that's a lot of MSB agents still around. Like, that's a lot of, and they're the good dudes, right? Like, that's your tier one guys there. So it's like, all right, if the tier one dude, they're in Moscow, like, why aren't they at the front? And it's like, okay, well, you know, that kind of goes back to like, what's Putin's plan? Just attrition and defense and all that stuff. But man, they went full Mike Tyson on that guy. They made him eat his own. Did you watch that?
I chose not to. I've heard enough. Yeah. I can imagine what it looks like to have someone eat their own ear.
And then they went to town on us.
Yeah. Oh, I also saw the results of that, and I can imagine what it looks like to move someone's face around like that. Yeah.
No, dude, they like.
I've seen enough violence. I don't mind skipping it these days. You know,
yeah.
Like I can imagine it just fine.
To him, they electrocuted his balls with.
Oh yeah, with the phone,
with the
field phone.
Yeah, and
that was full Jack Bauer. You say Mike Tyson? They went Jack Bauer on him.
Full Jack Bauer. Yeah.
Why do you have? Yeah, he's just like, why do you keep a spare battery in the car? It's like, yeah, like I mean, it was weird, right? So you guys know that they were like claimed by ISIS-K, which is the Afghanistan branch. And we were joking on the Patreon podcast. We were like, I got another podcast coming out with an old Intel buddy of mine. But no, we were joking.
Hey, where
we're
can like, people get those podcast like, episodes?
I'll put it on Spotify, foxhole.co.
There's a Patreon there, isn't there?
I'm yeah, there's a Patreon. And for $5, you too can become a man. Are you tired of the day-to-day grind and office hellscape? I know I was. That's why I quit. And my wife provides for me. And now she says I have to do something. And this is that something. You can spend $5 and be a man in our Discord. Do everything from physical fitness, Helldivers 2, Arma 3. Let us make fun of you. Post feed pics. We don't care. Patreon.
That's selling a Patreon right there.
Yes. Yeah, but...
Sorry, we digress. What were you saying?
I don't remember.
This is why I can't come on here. We derail every time, guys. Like, we were joking about because they're ISIS-K and they're in Afghanistan. And we were joking because, like, dude, they live in deplorable conditions where ISIS is. Like, they're like, we're going to get rid of all the electricity and all the internet. It's like, good, we never had it. And so what do we do? But I was like, how did they fund that? How did they, like, go around and, like, it's like church, you know, they're passing that little wicker basket around, like, put a dollar in for a terrorist attack, bro. Like, we need you now. But it's to be real honest, it's weird to me how far and how fast they go. I know I sent Dustin and the page a post about this guy who's just like deep down the rabbit hole on the Chechen war, and man, do those Chechens get around. They're like,
but these guys weren't Chechens though.
Yeah, they're Tajiks and but I mean, like, you know, Tajiks, Chechens, you know,
it's the opposite side of the Caspian, but I understand what you mean. Yeah. Okay, all right.
They're
steppe people. They're steppe people.
Yeah. Finally, okay, we'll stop.
Why?
I'm not saying, dude, if I lined 10 Caspian natives on a line, could you say, that's Tajik, that's an Azeri, that's an Armenian,
Turkmenistan.
That's a Turkmen.
Probably not.
It's weird to me how they get around the Chechens. There's, and this is another one for Julian, and he can answer it when he listens to this. It's like, you know, they get around, and it's a lot of like Turkey helping. And those guys did go through Turkey, is what I was seeing.
When you say get around, you're talking about they show up on different battle fronts?
Dude, it's wild.
I just want to make sure.
So hold on. So I posted something a long time ago. I was like, those are some really nice M4s that they have in Afghanistan. Like, how the hell did they get? And it was like a year after the fall of Afghanistan. I was like, there's no way a rifle is that clean. And everyone was like, no. I was like, well, dude, there are guys who fought in the Chechen War in the 90s, went to Afghanistan in 2001, showed up in Iraq, and then they got a ticket to Syria. And like, they're just like on war 5 or 6. And like, when I've said it before, but you know, when you're in a briefing for like an operation and someone like myself comes in and goes like, we got about 12 Chechens in this area, the whole room goes, oh, because they come to party and and you know, they're not to be taken lightly. And if from what I have seen and from like the logistics of it, it just doesn't make sense for it to be Ukrainian.
Attack in Russia.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I wouldn't say I'm not going to take the, you know, Ukraine is going to lose hat off, put on the real, you know, counterterrorism hat. They may have gone to Ukraine. They may have done some work there, fought some Russians, fought on the front, got some gear, got some money, done something. But I mean, they may have lied. I mean, I've seen a ton of posts of people sitting there saying, like, especially in Armenian groups, because what happened in the Armenian Azeri offensive, like 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago,
2020,
2020, there was ISIS fighters there. And there were ISIS guys in the Ukrainian units and in the Russian units. And it's like, well, those are Chechens and they get around. And like, you just, they're like Jawas, man. If you're in Tatooine, they're there. Right. Like, so yeah.
The Jawas run and shop in your neighborhood.
Yeah. Hudaydi, like, get out of here. You little Chechens. Like they go hard. And so it's, I'm going to see how it goes and let everybody talk. And I think the U.S. knows where they came from because they warned Russia in 48 hours ahead of time. And they're like, I'm not going to fall for that one.
Talk about that more, because as a news consumer that feels informed, I knew when the U.S. warned them because I saw it get told like a couple weeks before. And then I didn't recognize that there was a short term update. What is that? Like, how do those communications happen? How are those communications normally treated, even when they're among adversaries?
They're tense. So for instance, there was the incident with Fifth Group and Wagner in northern Syria.
Yeah.
And that was a ballsy call by the command team of Fifth Special Forces Group to be like, hey, you know, they called the Russian counterpart in the area. We have agreements, and they are tense. Like the whole Tower 22 incident where those soldiers died, that was literally, so like we had an agreement with the Russians. We're like, hey, we're going to stay X amount of kilometers from you. And what they did is they crossed all the way across Syria with the Tiger Group, the Tiger Battalion, the Syrian Special Forces mech unit. They crossed across Syria and then they cut us off, the Free Syrian Army. And so the north and the south couldn't connect. And then they just slowly walked us down to Tower 22 in southern Syria, which is where that drone strike happened. So we take it incredibly seriously when we work with like the Russians or the Chinese in that area. And it's very, you know, that Wagner strike didn't happen lightly. It was a very ballsy Green Beret who made that call and killed those guys. So when you pick up the phone and you start talking to Russia, like, hey, like, no shit. Like, we have a policy. If there is a terrorist attack like ISIS or ISIS-K, the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, whatever, like, we want to work with you on it. It was such, if you read the book Three Dangerous Men, we were working with Iran in Afghanistan before we invaded. We were working with the Iranians to build a target list of the Taliban. And then George Bush was like, they're part of the axis of evil. And the CIA went, oh my God, like, stop. We just had a meeting last week. Yeah. Like, and so when we say we're going to war on terrorism, like, brother, man, we will hunt you down and we will get you. You know, the intel apparatus has changed dramatically since I've left. It used to be a couple days, and now we're getting to the point that like the 2030 vision of the intel stratosphere for not just America, but Five Eyes as a whole, we're not going to be forward deploying as many dudes as we used to. So guys like me are going to be even more rare. And then we're going to send intel back to the States. And then we're going to have AI computing, like with Blackwell and stuff like that. There's new targeting systems that are coming out, which are like an app on the commander's work phone. So from going to briefings and stuff like that, it'll literally be an app on the phone. And some general will go, yeah, that looks good. Kill that guy. And then some drone will smoke a dude. And guys like me are going to be sitting back here in like scorpion gamer chairs. Like, yeah, like, got him. So
kind of like reviewing images that the AI brings to your attention, even, right? Like, pretty.
Because it identifies targets, essentially, right?
No. So what we're looking at is like, so we're cutting the intel processing power by two-thirds. So one-third will go forward. And then the other two-thirds will stay back behind. And then those AI computing chips like Blackwell and these systems of AI of targeting, like, it's just data soaking. It's just so much, you know, like when you see like things about China and they have like weeks and weeks and weeks of data, you know, somebody's got to go through that. And they used to be like enlisted intel guys who would go through that or collect that stuff. We'd bring it all together and then we'd read about it, talk about it, and then we brief it and do it. So now it's just going to be like, we take that job very seriously, counterterrorism. And we're so serious about it. Like, we saw, like, we'll tell Russia, like, hey, you're about to get smoked if you don't do this. Like, you got, here's what we have. Like, here's what we're looking at. This is ISIS-K in your backyard. They're about to attack you. And Russia said, no, you're a liar. And there was a really good college humor or YouTube video, but it's like the TSA is a joke.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just the idea that the TSA is just like that we are a security apparatus, when in reality, it's the intelligence infrastructure, like the NSA, the FBI, all those guys that are working around the clock to nab you and grab you. It's not the TSA that's going to get you. Nine times out of ten, it's going to be the FBI. For sharing stuff on your Minecraft Discord, you bastards.
God damn it. I have a couple questions about Modern Warfare. Like, how much...
Two is the best one.
Yeah. It was the best one. God, you got me thinking about survival.
How much have drones changed the way militaries operate? Specifically, I mean, the Ukrainian war, we've seen them on the water. We've seen them, you know, airborne, you know, blowing up ships, blowing up oil refineries, all of that. How big of a deal is that? Is that the newest cutting edge game changer?
Shout out to Julian, who just wrote an article about this. God damn. Like, you guys lost so much about it. I know. I'll keep pumping him because I read all of his stuff. But no, it's different and it's not, right? Like, we've been killing people with drones since the invasion of Iraq in 2003, right? We've had drones for a long time.
Obama famously loved
it. Dude, like, dude, so short story. My dad was in Syria. He wanted to drop a Moab, which is like it's a huge bomb. It's the biggest non-nuclear bomb.
It's the mother.
He's like, yeah, it's the mother of all bombs, in fact. But he wanted to drop a Moab on ISIS. And like, they were like, no, that's not happening.
And Trump was in office for like 5 days.
Dude, the next deployment cycle. He's like, where can we put this? And I got to see it. It's in Nangarhar, East Afghanistan. They were like, hey, I got there. I wasn't even there 24 hours. And they're like, hey, you want to see the Moab? And so they had the video, they had the workup, and then they let me fly a helicopter. I'm like, damn, it took a chunk out of the mountain.
Whoa.
Like, so it hit an ISIS target full of tunnels. Yeah. And so, like, it's always funny because, like, yeah, Obama loved drones. But then Trump comes in. He's like, where can we drop this? I need to let people know I'm in office. And there was just some ISIS cell on this mountain who thought they could dig a tunnel. And that just they were digging bodies out of there for like a month.
Don't you remember that was when CNN was like, well, this is very presidential of him. That was like, like they were making fun of Covfefe like 5 minutes ago. And then they were like, well, finally, he's presidential.
I would have firebombed him, but it's all dirt. Like, but drones are getting really personal, really quick. Right?
That's the Phoenix drones, right? The like backpack drone that takes one operator and has POV.
Little helicopter
little guys.
Those are so funny.
Like drop grenades with them or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I know the DJI.
Yeah.
Yeah, drones have changed a lot, but they haven't, and that's the thing, right? And
isn't it just going to be about the application of it, though?
What do you mean?
Well, it seems like, well, I don't know anything, but huge breakthroughs come from trying to do something in a way that nobody had ever considered before.
It seems that they're using them as replacement for artillery since they don't have enough.
Yeah.
This is what we have. This is what we can use, right? It's more of a...
Yeah. Source, it came to me in a dream. So the drone program is fun because it takes a lot of things that you wouldn't think about, right? So you've got guys who are going around, and there's a reason for that, is because Russia has a shit ton of EW. If you look at an order of battle, which is just basically a little chart of those triangles that I put on the page, they have an entire company per brigade. There's three brigades in a division, tons of EW everywhere.
Electronic warfare, just to clear.
Yeah, that. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. For the listeners, EW, electronic warfare, jammers, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We have, as far as cyber and EW goes, we got one guy per battalion. And so it's like their ability to jam drones, their ability to operate in that environment is mo beta. And so they have a thing that they call, like, the new Russian doctrine just came out, and it's called the snow globe. And so as you kind of get in closer to command and control, it gets harder and harder to get into with drones and like electronics.
It's
and
like
flying.
The red zone, like your windows get smaller, right?
Yeah, like an onion. EW has layers. Like,
oh, yeah, parfaits have layers.
Yeah.
Gotta peel awful. Back the layers.
Yeah. And so... drones have changed things in the sense of, like, you know, if you've ever read On Killing, the farther you are away from somebody, it's easier to kill them, right? This is a video game. And, you know, I've done the deed with drones. I've killed people with them, and it's easier. But the thing is that it opens a door for many people who couldn't be soldiers to be soldiers and fly drones. But there's a certain aspect to soldiering that you need to have, right? Like, shoot a guy in the kidney, right? You know, am I going to drop a big grenade? What are we dropping here? How are we going to kill him? You know, you start dissecting the act of it, right? Like, do I want to kill an NCO? Do I want to kill a recon guy? What am I looking to kill? Am I looking to kill the leader? You know, do I want to wound this guy? What if I hit him with something? You know, I've had that happen. I've wounded a guy with a Hellfire, and they'll look at me like, hey, do we want to go grab that guy? And it's, no, hit him again. And, you know, and so it's still an act. It's like snipers. The Marines have this great aspect. It's called a hog. It's Hunter of Grunt. And so you'd like, you have to hunt them. And it is, it's a kind of an art form of hunting soldiers, right? You can't just, a lot of guys, you know, are really big into the drones and the drone warfare. But when you start getting up into that levels of, you know, soft level of drones and like killing, like, for instance, the Iranian Secretary of Defense, the Quds Force leader, Soleimani, that's an art. You don't just kill that guy. You know, you got to hit him right where he needs to be, because he will go to houses. He will go. And, you know, we used to call it Taliban body armor. You know, they just like sit there. It's like, is that his kid? I don't think so, but he's got a leash on it. You know, you'd just be flying around with an armed drone watching this dude, and he's just got a kid on a leash. And so you got to wait for him to, you know, I used to have a phrase, everybody poops. Like, he's got to leave that house sometime and go to the outhouse. And when he does, man, so it's changed things. But if you want to be a good drone operator, you still need to be a good soldier, because you need to know how to do the deed and what does it mean, right? Like, what if, you know, is that a tank? What kind of tank is it? Shout out to AFV recognition. But, you know, is that a command tank? You need to know the difference, because if you hit just like jolly old blow on the left flank, it's not going to make a difference. But if you kill the commander's tank, that's going to be huge. I mean, there was a drone on his page. It killed a command vehicle. It was an armored command vehicle they spotted. And it's like one of the rarest armored fighting vehicles out there. And it's like, whoa, why was, you know, and if you're a drone operator, you would have looked at it and been like, man, it looks like a little tank with no gun. But if you know what you're looking for, it's like, oh, shit, you know, turn, hit. And
so there's a whole philosophy to it. Yeah, I get that. Okay.
It's an art.
It's an art, baby. Art. It is. I commented on your that post of yours. You make warfare sound like poetry, dude. I meant that. You really do a good job of explaining that stuff.
Yeah. You're the black science man of war.
Right.
I only said it because I can't remember his name.
That is a t-shirt. I'm like, it's like me as Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Neil deGrasse Tyson,
I want that so bad.
You gotta get that in the merch store. there was an article in New York Times today, Russia amps up online campaign against Ukraine before U.S. elections. Yeah. So essentially, they're leveraging their resources. Like, I guess the Internet Research Agency is sort of not there anymore after Prigozhin's gone, but they have similar forces within their intelligence community. And they're now trying to sow disinformation about Ukraine to move the public opinion away from supporting that war. How big of a deal does that matter now? Disinformation. I mean, we've been doing it for decades as the U.S. as well, but like, is it a game changer now with social media? Like, is that?
I remember last time we talked about this, you guys, like, I was like, yeah, I've done miso, and you're like, what? It's like, yeah, the psyop cell where we make memes and we fight on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, wait, what? The fucking, yeah, we do that. Oh, dude, we do that all the time. And it's the funniest thing about that is like Prigozhin, when he gave that brief, he had like fucking thumbtacks, and he had like one red needle in New Zealand, and everyone's like, what the fuck does that mean? And it's like, dude, he could have just put that thumbtack there and just like,
funsies.
Okay,
yeah, that guy's gonna freak out. Yeah,
right.
So the book, again, Three Dangerous Men, it talks about this. It talks about how what they found, the FBI found, was that the people in doing these cyber attacks, doing these psyop attacks, they just put gasoline on fires of their choice, right? Like if they see something that they like, they're like, oh, that'll really piss off the kids. You ever seen that WKUK skit where it's like that one teacher keeps, he's like, that'll really piss off the kids. That's all PSYOPs is like,
right.
If you see somebody like our beloved Soleimani died, you know, and like, praise be to he, you know, you just comment like, yeah, he really wasn't that good, bro. Like,
It's just meme pages and trolls. Like,
yeah. Just get it. Just stoke it up. I mean, if I did a podcast last night and we talked about this. I was like, if somebody says something and it drives you to think about action, you are being psyoped. You are being influenced through words. And it is, you have to be water off a duck's back. And, you know, I've got some. And
it takes like intercepting the thought process.
Yeah. You have to stop and take a minute and like be like, oh shit. Like he's definitely trying to troll me right now. And the Zoomers. Oh my God. I've got some Zoomers in my Discord. I'm like, bro, you just need to go PSYOPs. You make people like just want to throw dinner plates across the room. just through a Discord conversation.
Right.
And so that's what I would say to people is like, look, they're only going to add fuel to fires. And you make that choice every day on, you know, what is it? Seneca or like meditations, like nothing has any value unless you place that value upon it. Right. It's the idea of like emotional tolerance. And I firmly believe that we're in some type of, you know, America's never been more depressed and men have low testosterone levels and everything just feels like shit right now. And I would say to you, yeah, that's the point, right? Like Jackie Chan now sings like inspirational Chinese military songs. Like they Toby Keith Jackie Chan. Like we are at, like, they can't beat us on the battlefield. You know, they have to, the walls of Rome are high and guarded. But whatever is in here is what's going to kill us.
And we're susceptible to it. It's a weakness of classical liberal based institutions and a constitutional government. Like if you have the freedom of X, Y, and Z, you have maximized that at the cost of allowing bullshit in. So
there's ways to hack that sort of environment.
We are tolerant of bullshit. Yeah. So, you know, we just say like, no, we'll be smart enough not to let it get us. Whereas they're like, no bullshit because it ruins everything we're trying to fucking do here. And so it doesn't get them, but they can export it. Great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I got to publish that episode, but I told them, my buddy who's.
You just sit on pods. You just like record it and just hold it.
Yeah. Well, I told you.
Diamond hands to the podcast.
No, it's as you know, that's what you have to do is that's how you beat that. How do you beat the Russian PSYOPs? Well, you don't sit there and bring it up on CNN and you don't bring it up on like Fox News and say, you know, oh, they influenced the campaign again. They're, you know, Trump's backed Clinton this. And like in the book, Three Dangerous Men, it talks about that. It was like, you know, the Russians actually helped the Clinton administration more because they knew it would piss off the Republicans. And once again, that's all PSYOPs is like, who can we really, you know, how can we really piss them off? And I'm telling you, when January 6th happened, dude, Russian PSYOPs teams were probably, everybody gets a promotion. Everybody gets a vodka and like beet soup for a year. Like that is awesome. They were saying, you know, hey, Mike Pence, fuck yes. Like
got it. Yeah.
So because they don't really care about which side wins or loses.
No, as long as you kill.
So discontent.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that you guys are a great example of it. Anybody who discusses things, like if you're a conservative or a liberal, if you're, you know, disagreeing on things and, you know, bringing me and Julian on here to talk about things, even though we disagree, like that's how you stop it. Right. Like on Instagram, you know, me and him disagree and we disagree about assessments, but it's like, that's how you stop the PSYOP is you go outside your door and look to your left and right and you go, you know, my neighbor is actually not that bad.
Like, that name where he's like, I'm literally your neighbor.
So,
keep doing what you're doing.
We have a question from Wei here that we should ask before you go. He said, what are Cody's thoughts on Russian Black Sea Fleet unable to continue to base in Sevastopol?
All right. When was the Black Sea Fleet actually good? Point me to that.
About a week after they set up all those mines and had freedom of movement for a short period of time.
Dude, if you look at it historically, like the the Black Sea Fleet. Like, it's like this drunken, fucked up rambling. Like, the fucking aircraft carrier is like burning coal and they're like sinking these boats and they're like, man, we are whooping ass. And it's like, nobody has respected the Black Sea Fleet since like Elizabeth. Like, holy shit, bro. And I mean, here's the other thing, bro. What's his name?
Wei.
Go read Where the Iron Crosses Grow. There's a quote by Hitler where he says Crimea is the aircraft carrier of the Black Sea. Mm-hmm. It's a free one. It's a fortress. I mean, if you there's a 18-hour, I'm not going to Russian documentary about the entire Crimea campaign. It's got mountains in the south. It's got fortresses all over. They can launch attacks into the Romanian oil fields and farther. You know, it's kind of, you know, Putin invaded that first. And if you need, you know, what does Putin think about the Black Sea Fleet? Well, he wasn't fucking betting on them. That's for sure. He took Crimea. He's like, we'll just take Crimea.
I see, yeah.
And then
bloodlessly too. Like, I mean, they essentially took Crimea bloodlessly.
Yeah. Because they, I mean, and that was the weird part, right? And, you know, that happened in 2014. Yeah. And so I was like, yeah, I was in college. I was like, that's weird. But then, like, you know, here we stand. I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
Right.
Like, you see the Black Sea Fleet doing what it's doing today, and it's like, Jesus, could you not stop? Like,
do you remember sinking? Did you listen to Carlin back then? Carlin had his Common Sense podcast.
Yeah,
my favorite Dan Carlin Common Sense episode was poking the Russian bear, and it was 2014. I still have it saved as an MP3. I go back and listen to it every once in a while. It was prescient, and it was a pivot point in history that we didn't take advantage of.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I really wish, once again, Julian, if you're listening, it boils down to, we as Americans have to make a choice. And I agree with him, right? Like, Putin wants this world where we have nobody to hold us accountable. Nobody does anything, you know, free for all. You know, we're going to attack Ethiopia, we're going to fight in Ukraine, we're going to fight in Taiwan, we're going to fight everywhere. But we're Americans, God damn it. And so, where's my national anthem? Do you have a button for that? Like, fucking stand up, cocksuckers. We'll bring it back to BRT Tuesdays. We're not doing fucking NAFO Toonie Tuesdays. We're going to be taking BRDMs from the fucking Czechs. We're going to be going from Poland to Moscow. Every fucking river is going to be a crossing of dead Russians. Fuck that shit. God fucking damn it. You know, I love your shirt, The Culture War, because it's like, what the fuck did this? If my grandfather was alive for this, he'd be like, just get me away from your grandmother. Fuck, just let me go kill them. I don't give a shit, bro. And it's not that bad. The NATO secretary came up and said, hey, we war gamed it. And we would have, like, for every 1,000 Russians we killed, there'd be like one dead NATO member. And it was like, you know, and everyone sits there, it's like, Ukraine's protecting freedom. Bullshit. They're dying for it. We could be there in Moscow tomorrow. And it's like, okay, well, if we don't want to go to war, what do we do? And, you know, everybody's, you know, and this is the other thing. Republicans sit there and they fucking say that shit. Like, oh, it's a woke army and all that things. And liberal blue-haired soldiers. It's like, I promise you, bring back the shark attacks with the drill sergeants yelling at people. Make everybody, you know, and you can do that. You don't even have to be in the military to fix this issue, man. You can be a good American, be a good German, Italian, be whatever. We're the West, God damn it. And they will fucking fear us. Fuck.
Well, like, that's, so, okay. Yeah. So only, yeah. I agree with you 100%. I'm ready to run through this wall
over here.
But what about nukes? Like, is he just, what, you say,
dude, you gotta, like, you're sore loser mentality. That's what I would say. What are you gonna do, nuke me? That's how you know you lost, motherfucker.
Well, yeah, but then we all, like every one of those warheads has like 100 square miles.
We've got trillions of dollars in debt. Put another trillion on there and reenact Reagan's Star Wars. We're going balls deep, bro. I don't give a fuck.
Okay.
Like, dude, Israel did it. Israel told the whole world, I'm going to war. And everyone's like, well, think about the Palestine war. I'm going war. War. from the river to the sea. And like, what? Israel. That's what. All right. Now, like, they don't care. And, you know, that's what the fourth and fifth generation warfare is. And when I talk to my co-host Tobin and I talk to anybody. I'm like, that's what I do at Foxhole, right? Like, I talk to everybody, I talk to anyone, but the one thing you're not going to be is like the fetist. You can be in a wheelchair, but God damn it, you're going to be the best, you know, strategist, you know, in the terms of Bush. I'll teach you how to do tank files. We'll play war games. You'll read. You'll be a goddamn Machiavellian, right? I mean, there's guns that attach to wheelchairs. I don't give a fuck. You can guard the radio, dude.
Have you seen the governor of Texas? He's got an all-terrain chair.
Hot wheels?
Come on, man. Like, you can do anything.
Going. Like, no, dude, like, we're the West. Get on, you know. Yeah. Hey,
we the West.
Yeah. I don't care.
His energy drinks today for sure.
it's just
it's pre-workout.
Nah, this is just bald eagles going through the veins.
Right. it's 2024. We're so back. The boys are back. That's what 2024 is.
Let's go.
Trump, Biden, RFK Jr. I don't give a fuck. You know, if we're gonna win, we're gonna stop with this. God, dude, like, I'll post a Doge meme and we're gonna win the war by raising money for helmets. Fuck that. How much for like a JDAM on a slingshot? How do we kill people? Like, make your grandfather who fought Nam proud. Let's raise money for a super cobra. Let's send him to Jordan. Let's send 122 dudes to the King Abdullah Jordanian Special Operations Complex and make like 120 operators and just murder people. And we'll put them on GoPros and we'll be like, that's what we fund. Fuck you, Tootie. Like, dude. If we're gonna do it, let's do it. But like, don't sit here and like I hate it. I'm over it. I'm 30 years old, god damn it. Let's get back. You know, we're playing Slipknot and Godsmack. We're going to Baghdad again. Everybody's gonna make shitty G-Watt videos. You know, that's what the dudes want.
Keith's made a comeback briefly.
God bless that American dude. Like, that's what we need. We need a Toby Keith, like Darius Rucker.
That's the problem. That's the problem. We don't have good country anymore. There it is.
Yeah,
that's what's wrong with the world today.
Yeah. I mean, dude, Shane Gillis, he went on SNL, and I quote, he said, "Retard and gay." It's back. It's all back. It doesn't matter anymore. Nothing matters anymore. Free speech.
That's fucking
freedom.
Retarded.
Guns. Yeah.
Where's the? I put this one in brown so I'd find it.
About 3% of our national population is retarded.
We got a one-star review over this.
We did.
Nobody cared when we played this clip.
Tell the patient you are going to insert your finger into his rectum and that it will be cool.
Nobody cared about that, but you know, you say the R word once.
Jerking the ween.
When I was in aerosol school over 11 years ago, right? That's how fucking long this ago was. We came in from a 6 miler and they had like this bay. So it was like the building you're looking at. And then they had like a little awning. And then there was like a bay where stuff was. They didn't have the fence like covered so you could see into it. And it's like where you did sling loads and stuff. And I'll never forget this as long as I live, because they would take those heat casualties, throw them over there, pull their pants down, stick them in the ass. It was a mass CAS, and that's where they got a thermal temperature. And it was like some NCO just passed me. He was like, that's what failure looks like, cadet. And it was like, dude, it's getting a thermometer up the ass. And I was just like, God, like, like that stuck with me.
Yeah,
for 11 years.
That kind of like, visual you don't forget, I would imagine.
Well, yeah, they don't do that anymore. But
they don't do that anymore.
Let me tell you something.
Holy shit, bro.
Evil's on the rise. P. Diddy's fucking butts. Epstein's fucking butt. Everybody's
I wanted to ask Julian. Julian, a lifelong New Yorker, like, what do you think about Puff Daddy?
Yeah, fuck, man.
I don't know, but we gotta stop it. All that's necessary for evil to flourish is good men do nothing.
That's a good point.
We gotta get up there, bring that energy back, everybody. Biceps on Tuesdays, Mondays chest, Wednesdays upper body, and Thursdays shoulders. It's all fucking upper body.
Yes, only upper body. Clubs. Yeah, I do legs every day. I walk around. I've done legs. Yes. Yeah.
Every day's leg day.
Carry a backpack. No days. Oh, all right.
So that's how we fix this. We bring the TRT. We put TRT in the water. We stop turning the freaking frogs gay.
That actually seems affordable. Yeah,
it actually is.
It literally goes a long way, right? Because it's like TRT is one of those things where it's like you can't put that in a container that anybody else even touches. Like,
Yeah, yeah. Oh, dude, yeah. There's like stories of, because it's like a shot, but there's like the creams and stuff, yeah, and there's the like women who work in men's clinics, and they'll have like an extra, like a little bit of the cream will be on the chair, uh-huh, and they'll like hit it with their arm, and they're like, "I'm looking at the fat doctor, like he's the most beautiful man in the world, and I want to fuck his brains out." I'm like, what's happening right now? It's like just a micro dose of TRT on women. It's like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about, baby. That's what we
kids
need.
Don't take notes. Don't listen to Cody. No, no.
That's how we're doing congressional sessions. Everybody's getting a little cream.
That's what Bobert takes to the musicals. Yeah. Just a little bit of, they put a little cream on the popcorn. Next thing you know, she's reaching over the pants. all right. We got to land this plane at some point.
Yeah,
Cody,
man.
It's been a blast having you back on. Can we get one more? I know you gave us one before, but do you want to do a this is Cody from Foxhole? Like plug
yeah.
the yeah.
So that yeah, this and, is Cody. I'm at.
Oh wait, wait. Foxhole. I want you to say that you don't listen to our podcast, and I'm gonna.
Oh
isolate.
No, I don't listen to your podcast.
No, but say I'm Cody from. I know you don't, because this is the intro to the show. You know what? You do a better thing than that. You're a friend. Thank you for being a friend.
You are. Yeah.
So this is Cody.
I am Cody from Foxhole. Yeah. And I do not listen to.
Well, I talked over it.
There you go.
I talked over it. I don't have isolated
perfect.
Tracks.
That's exactly how this show goes.
God
damn. It is.
You do it again.
But yeah, you can find me at foxhole.co. You can also type in myfoxhole.co on the interwebs of the internets, right there in the search bar, myfoxhole.co. So what I do now, we've got guys who have their own pages. We put them on the website, not a Substack, because nobody fucking reads Substack, and nobody gives you a dollar for your... Nobody gives you a goddamn dollar for your stupid ass Substack. Be a man, make a website, get a veteran coffee company to sponsor you and do dumb things like a goddamn red-blooded American.
Here.
And so we have our own website. We have an Instagram. I need to start tweeting or Xing or whatever the kids call it these days. And I'm going to be doing YouTube videos soon.
Oh, nice. Right on.
Don't be an Xer.
No, it can't be Xing. I didn't hear what you just said.
I was going to say tweeting, but I need to post my videos on the Twitter or the Twatter. I tweet.
Twitter.
What is the action of tweeting? Because that tweeting, I was tweeting. Because you could be, you know, Trump used to, oh man, now we get into the verbiage of it. And I can't wait. Part of me only hopes that Trump gets elected so that he can do the 2 a.m. tweets. I always picture him, red knees. Elbows on the knees, and a Diet Coke in the underwear hammock.
I can see it. I can see it.
That's a move.
That is. All right, dude.
I didn't know everybody did that.
Again, bro?
That's what I like. You get three guys hanging out. You find out things that people do. Everybody does the underwear hammock?
Everybody does that.
I didn't know that. I put my vape there, and then I put it in my mouth.
Put my gun there.
I'm never sure.
Oh, gun goes in the drawer. It's a podcast gun.
Podcast gun.
There we go. Nice. We both got Alan, where's your podcast gun? Oh, that's right. You're in California.
I have a phone.
Yeah. No, here, take my phone.
I got to go. But, you know, the Toronto mayor literally said, make sure you leave your keys by the door.
We played it on the show. Okay. We played that shit on the show. It was fucking great. Right. Thanks again for coming on, man.
Love you guys. Take care, man. Love you. Cheers. Dude, that was so much fun.
That was fucking awesome. I didn't end the call. That was close. Yeah. I didn't know you were going to keep talking. Hey, that was a blast. Yeah.
That was a
blast. I told Natasha no later than 8:30. So I will...
You better go then.
Talk to you tomorrow and we'll do some headlines.
Hell yeah.
All right, man.
See you tomorrow.
Drive safe.
When a guy's banging you...
Y'all let me in his damn house.
Oh, how about that?
Come in the name of peace.
LMFAO.
So what in the world is this?
Is Kevin McCarthy a moron, and if so, why?
Why would you say something that stupid?
I come without explanations or solutions.
I'm a very sexy lady, cat turd. I will not suffer this harlot.
How great, an anti-American Marxist.
Ted Cruz, go fuck yourself.
Read the news.
China is asshole.
God bless the United States.
Now this is podcasting.